Hi, this is Linda Godfrey, author of The Michigan Dog Man, Werewolf, and Other Unknown Canines Across the USA. You're listening to the real dog man, TJ Ryan.
His name is John Fitzgerald. He's an author, and he wrote a book called The Watergate Amendment. Now, as I remember Watergate, I was a kid at the time, and I remember the President of the United States had to step down. There was a break-in at the Watergate Hotel. The President, Nixon, he didn't encourage the break-in. He was spying on the Democrats, but he felt the need to cover it up. And, of course, he taped everything he said because somebody told him, well, you want to do that as president. Someday you'll be able to use it. And I guess these people want to be remembered. They want to go down in history. So then he had to erase the tapes. It was just a mess, and he had to resign. And, you know, you hear certain things in the news, and I believe we don't always, we almost never really hear all the truth. There's so many other things that go on. So my show is about finding some of that. Now, maybe I'm reading more into this than I thought, but John, how you doing? Where are you calling from this morning? Anyway.
Cincinnati.
Oh, Cincinnati, not that far down the road. So you've been an author for how long?
Well, this book was written actually probably around 25 years ago.
No kidding. And this is a subject, how did you grab an interest in this?
Well, I was always, kind of a student of politics at any rate, but as the incidents occurred, I couldn't understand the professionals that were involved in this, how this thing could get out of hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it started out, it really could have been something small, and then it just grew to huge with the Watergate scandal. So you put together a book, and you really feel Nelson Rockefeller has a lot to do with this.
Absolutely.
And how did you come, where did you get all your facts in? How did you learn all these things?
Well, as I mentioned, I was an observer, and I was curious, how did Nixon get involved in this thing? And one of the terms, they always follow the money. Mm-hmm. Follow the money in sports, follow the money in politics.
Okay.
And in this case, I couldn't understand who would benefit by Nixon being thrown out of office, or why would he allow this thing to get out of hand and the whole thing. And all the little dots after 9/11, when they talked about connecting the dots, and there seemed to be a lot of dots that were originated in New York. And so when this thing was unfolding, it all pointed to who would benefit the most from it. And at the end game, if you remember Squeaky Fromm and Sarah Moore.
Yes, I do.
And they took a pot shot at Gerald Ford. Well, if the third assassination on Gerald Ford would have been lethal, the wealthiest, most powerful man in the world would have been the President of the United States, not through an election, but through an appointment. And that's when the red lights went off in my head and started back engineering, how did this all come about?
Interesting. Just, I don't want to get ahead of this because there's so much to it. Are you suggesting that, because he really had a lot of assassination attempts, probably more than any other president.
Yes.
Are you suggesting that Nelson Rockefeller might have been behind some of that?
Well, in the story implies that that happened. Yes.
Wow, that is something. Just for fun and the fun of it, and we'll get back to your story. Do you think there was more to the Kennedy story too?
No, I don't really.
You don't feel that there was a... Some people are saying Lyndon Johnson had something to do with that.
Well, I've often said if there was any president that would do it, it would be Lyndon Johnson. And if there's any town he could do it in, it would be Dallas.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you find out, and now Nixon, you claim that Nixon, he loses in 1960, so I guess this is a good tie-in that I brought up Kennedy. He loses to Kennedy in 1960. He's pretty much dead in the water. Then what happened?
Well, in 1960, he lost the presidential run to Kennedy. Then he goes to California, and his home state, and runs for governor, and he's soundly defeated. And in his press conference afterwards, he said, "You don't have Nixon to kick around anymore," told the news media.
Mm-hmm.
He was out of politics. He was a washed-up has-been. He is then moves to New York and lives in the Rockefeller Center. And his political career is rebounded with the New York support, and he gets the Republican nomination for president, almost unheard of.
Mm-hmm. And so somebody had to help him out quite a bit there.
Someone helped him out a great deal from New York, helped him get the nomination. Then when he, in 1968, when he is running, he's running against the vice president, who was very popular, the happy warrior, Herbert Humphrey.
Humphrey, yeah.
And the only way Nixon could beat him is with the aid of George Wallace, the governor of Alabama. And Wallace was a very popular Democratic candidate. And Wallace was financially influenced to withdraw from the Democratic Party and run as an independent. And he was heavily financed with and influenced, some say, by his neighbor, the governor of Arkansas at the time, and that happened to be Nelson Rockefeller's brother, Winfield Rockefeller.
Mm, interesting. Somebody's putting the pieces together, it looks like. There's some connections going. How long did it take you to write all this?
I had written the book 20 years ago, and I thought, you know what, it just seemed too wild. And I put it in the closet and forgot about it. And then a few years ago, I blew the dust off it, and I said, and found out that this book is actually more real than even I thought.
Well, you know, I'm one to believe, I don't know, I'm very open to the possibility of there's so much more going on, and I probably would think there's even more than what you're suggesting here. For years, I believe there's been more than that. So then what happens? Nixon gets in office. Are you saying that the Watergate scandal was created to bring Nixon down? Or were you talking about Spiro Agnew?
Spiro Agnew was the head of Rockefeller for campaign, or Rockefeller for president campaign. Spiro was a politician out of the state of Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember when he was running, the comment was, "Spiro who?" Because no one knew him.
Right.
But Nelson Rockefeller did. And Rockefeller's, in the story, it mentions that one of the agreements that Nixon makes with Rocky is that he would accept certain things from Rocky, and Spiro Agnew is one of them. Well, that was a Rockefeller appointment, along with Henry Kissinger and a few others, John Mitchell. All the power people were from New York.
So Agnew, what was it, tax evasion? Is that what he stepped up? What was it that he had to step down because of?
If you remember, Spiro Agnew was a very strong character. And he made, I think it was cover of Life magazine one time, and they showed a picture of a Mr. Clean. Because even during the Watergate, Agnew was squeaky clean, they said. Except for there was this bribery charge. And Spiro Agnew was going to fight this right up to the very end. Now, you may know DJ Brian Lamb. He does he's on CNN, does book reviews and Sunday mornings and the like.
Mm-hmm.
He was interviewing Tom Friedman, I believe it was, who was a secretary for Gerald Ford. This is a few years ago. And appointment secretary for Gerald Ford, and when Brian Lamb was talking to him, he asked what high school he went to, where he worked, yada, yada, yada. And then Tom had said that he'd worked for Nelson Rockefeller one time, and my ears perked up. And then he left Rockefeller to work for Gerald Ford as appointment secretary.
Interesting. Huh?
And then Brian Lamb said, "Oh, well, then you probably knew Spiro Agnew." He said, "Yes, I knew Spiro Agnew." And he said, "Well, now he was a real crook, wasn't he?" And he said, "Well, he said he didn't do anything wrong." And he said, "Well, what do you mean? He was going to go to jail. That's the reason he resigned." He said, well, if you remember, he wasn't going to resign. It was right at the very end. He just decided to step down. Well, why did he do that? Now, this is not a 3 o'clock in the morning interview. This is Sunday morning with Brian Lamb on, you know, Washington books and stuff like that. And the guy looks at me and said, well, Spiro told me that if he didn't resign, he'd be killed.
What? Really?
That's what he said.
Well,
this is
holy bananas. Wow.
And I perked up and I, what? The Vice President of the United States told this man that he was going to be killed.
Holy bananas.
And Lamb said, who would kill the Vice President of the United States? Stamp said, well, he told me, Al Haig.
Huh.
And then they, well, let's go on to something else. And I couldn't believe it that here on public, on a Sunday morning TV program,
right?
And this writing this book, there's so many things that are so unbelievable that I have a website called thewatergateamendment.com, and that I show the confirming evidence of all these things. And on one of it is the actual taped interview that you can actually see this.
You can see Spiro making those statements.
No, the writer.
Oh, okay.
Relaying that he personally knew Spiro.
And he
Spiro
talks
had
that.
Told him and told him that Al Haig had threatened to kill Spiro Agnew.
Wow. That is something else. Now, who did Haig? He was under Reagan, wasn't he?
No. Al Haig was the, although, yes, he was a Kissinger guy, and he was a know-nothing colonel that worked at the White House and became a four-star general. The only American general to skip three stars during peacetime. He went from a colonel to a one-star to a two-star to a four-star general.
And then he also, what was his...
Secretary of State.
Under Reagan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
So, here you have the vice president who claims that he was going to be assassinated, and people find it hard to believe, but I think this has gone on in our politics. Very powerful people do things, whatever it takes, right, to get where they want to be. So, tell me about this, how this amendment came into play.
Well, how it came into play was, as the story goes, that the character Jude Thaddeus was a master chess player, and he connived a chess strategy to make Nelson Rockefeller president. And the only way that he could do that is by changing the Constitution of the United States. And the one way you change the Constitution is by an amendment.
Okay.
So he contrived to make, design an amendment to the Constitution, the 25th Amendment, that allows the president to appoint a vice president in the case of in the event of a vacancy. Like Harry Truman, after Roosevelt died, Harry Truman didn't have a vice president for a while. Lyndon Johnson, after Kennedy was assassinated, had no vice president. So it gave the president the opportunity to appoint a vice president with congressional approval, both House and Senate approval. And that plan was connived by this character and was introduced in the Senate by Senator Keating from New York and in the House of Representatives by Congressman Cullen from the city of New York City. So there again, the New York both, fingerprints.
Both connected to Rockefeller, I'm guessing, right?
And Birch Bayh from Indiana wrote, was the author of the 25th Amendment. And in his book, A Heartbeat Away, he gives special thanks to someone who helped write the amendment and was kind of the architect of it, and that was Nelson Rockefeller. And then years later, Rockefeller was the recipient of the amendment that he had designed.
So Nixon, Agnew steps down, Gerald Ford, I mean, is he handpicked too then, or how does that work?
Yeah, Gerald Ford was, had finished in politics. He was a candidate you'd want. He was a congressman that was liked on both sides of the aisle. A very nice gentleman. Everybody liked Gerald Ford. So if there's anyone who's going to walk down the aisle and have both Republican and Democratic approval, it would be Gerald Ford. And it also eliminated the possibility of being tied up in the courts. So you'd want, in the design of the plan, was to always have someone go first to make sure it works.
So then, now, do you believe that this scandal, because I don't think we ever really answered that, do you believe the Watergate scandal was deliberately created? And
yes.
Nelson Rockefeller had something to do with it?
Yes. The one person who that was involved heavily in it, went to jail for it, was John Mitchell, because he was right. The one who financed it. And Mitchell was a Rockefeller man. He was the one who did all the bond work for Rocky.
Was Liddy connected to that as well in any way?
Ricky, G. Gordon Liddy was an anti-communist zealot. And so he was one that would be used.
Mm, kind of a... somebody they could use as a pawn. He really didn't probably know everything that was going on.
Right, right, exactly. He was a foot soldier.
Okay. Because he's come out and said some things since then, since he's been out. I know he's been pretty much against a lot of things going on in this country. So, all the president's men, a lot of them take a heat. He eventually resigns. Ford takes over. Now, there is something in here I was looking in the information that you sent me about manipulated elections.
Mm-hmm.
What can you tell me about that?
Well, the manipulation was that
in '68 originally. Was it in '68 you're talking about when he ran against Humphrey?
Okay. When Rockefeller, behind the scenes, funded Nixon to get him the nomination, and also funded George Wallace, knowing that Wallace wasn't going to get elected, but he would steal enough votes away from Humphrey. Wallace carried six states that were Democratic states that would have gone to Humphrey.
Okay. So you don't believe that the elections are fudged or controlled? You're not saying that?
Well, there's a lot of fudging going on, yes. But
they can't, let's put it this way, no hanging chads? Things like that are very suspicious, you know? When we had in 2000 the hanging chads, I thought, come on, really? This is not, I don't think they're telling us the truth on this. And then we had Ohio the next term after that, the next 4 years. Very suspicious there. And so I just wonder if maybe today they can kind of manipulate the vote count.
It's. I believe it's a little bit more difficult because with the computers and the like. But the more sophisticated it gets, the more it could go, perhaps go either way. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, it's there's fudging where there could be in cities. Absolutely, it's as crooked as a beer pretzel. All you have to do is just look at the results.
What about the primaries? Can they? You know, I've read a book. Well, I interviewed a man who talked about how even in the primaries they can mess with that a bit.
Oh sure, they absolutely. The elections, there's a tremendous amount of things. That's why so much money is spent. But this story was around elections, so it really didn't depend, because Rocky knew he couldn't get elected,
mm-hmm.
but he could get appointed. And the amendment itself, one of the interesting parts, is that this thing, changing of the Constitution, never made the networks, never made the front page of the Times or the Washington Post.
And why do you think that would be?
Because they didn't want anyone to know about it, because it wasn't in Rockefeller's interest.
And he owned, didn't he own the Times and the Post? Is that, are those the two, didn't he have ownership of one of the magazines or newspapers?
They have tremendous amount of ownership of different things. And between the Times and the Post, if you control the Times, if the Times runs a headline about a two-headed duck in Iowa, all the rest of the news follows a two-headed duck in Iowa.
instead of the two-headed duck in Washington, maybe, right?
Right. Well, if there's a two-headed duck in Washington and they didn't want anyone to know, it wouldn't be on the news.
Well, the one that made president or vice president by the name of Nelson Rockefeller, two-headed duck there. So the media, you're saying, is controlled.
Well, let me put it this way. During the Second World War, there was Bill Donovan controlled the OSS, which was the spies throughout the world, mm-hmm. with the exception of the United States, and the spying networks there were controlled by J. Edgar Hoover. Now, in South America, it was a separate entity all by itself. The head spy for that area was Nelson Rockefeller. And Nelson Rockefeller, in South America, developed a news system to combat the Nazis' propaganda. And that was a controlled news system. And I think that he took that expertise back to New York with him. And that's where all the news comes out of.
So you're telling me you think a lot of the media is controlled. They're not reporting honestly. They're not reporting in our best interest. They're reporting in somebody else's best interest.
Right.
And we have some very powerful people that own certain parts of the media. So he controls that. This doesn't come out, just like other things throughout our history. And especially more recently, it seems like a lot of things are kind of, I can't understand why they don't bring them out. So then Ford is in as the president. Rockefeller, he came in. What year did he come in as the vice president, as the VP?
I think it was 74, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he had to be almost right when he stepped in there, right? And so, because Nixon resigned in 74. So Ford had to take over right then, right?
Right, so Ford takes over as president. He turns to the guy who's actually running the government, Henry Kissinger, and he says to Henry, "Henry, who should we get as vice president? Who do you think?" "Well, Mr. President, the governor of New York, after four terms, being elected as fourth, has resigned as governor of New York, and he has nothing to do." Nelson Rockefeller.
And so Rockefeller's brought in. And then Gerald Ford, we get Squeaky Fromm, who claims to be a Charlie Manson follower.
Drug-related.
And was she really?
Oh, yeah. But Squeaky Fromm and Sarah Moore both were mentally deranged and heavily drug-infused. So the third assassination attempt would have been by a South American hitman. And then you would have been drug related.
So were the other two gals, were they put up to this? Were they influenced to do
this?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you think Nelson Rockefeller had something to do with that?
Well, as a spy in the story that he uses his South American former killers that were used against the Nazis and recruited them to help him on this one little
boy. I tell you what, Gerald Ford is one lucky guy, isn't he? I mean, he basically survives those three attempts, right?
Well, the third one was called off.
It was called off, okay, because I only remember the two. So he survives those, or maybe they're just bad shots, or maybe they're just loopy because they're on drugs, or whatever the case.
They were intended to miss. They weren't intended to kill him.
They were. But I thought you said Nelson wanted to take over.
Yes, the third assassination attempt would have been real. Those two, like when Kennedy was assassinated, it was a shock. I mean, everyone was dumbfounded.
Right.
But if Gerald Ford had been assassinated, it would have been, well, you know, Squeaky Fromm and Sarah Moore. Then he was involved in the guy ran the limousine. They had an accident. Remember, guy ran through the, he was on a motorcade and ran smashed into the presidential car. So even at the time, they were saying, well, maybe Gerald Ford should stay home more often instead of out traveling around.
Right.
So if he was assassinated, it wouldn't have been the shock. Hmm. Surprise, yes, but not real shock of Kennedy's.
So why did they call it off? Because Rockefeller died in office, didn't he? Or he died shortly after. What happened to Rockefeller? I don't remember exactly.
Well, Rocky, as the cowboys would say, he died in the saddle. But after in the story, he relates that he has a bottle of cognac that was Napoleon's. It hadn't been opened. And when he calls the character in to call off the assassination, he says that as vice president, he's seen firsthand what it was like to be the president. And the doctors have told him he doesn't have too much time left. So I want to enjoy my life. And he said, he points his bottle of cognac and he said, this is the most valuable bottle of booze in the world. But he said, once it's corked, once I take the cork off it, then it deteriorates in value because it's, you know, it's achieved its thing and it's going to be consumed. And he said, in life, if I get that final thing in life, then it's life is no longer has a thirst for me. So I want to continue to live in an exciting way. And if I'm meant to be the president, well, maybe something will happen to Ford. If not, I want to enjoy my women folks.
Mm. And then he is saying he died, his health gave out, and that's what...
He died in a... on top of a young woman in the Brownstone in New York, and he died of a heart attack in, well, making love.
So, see, because I heard that there was a possibility that he might have been murdered as well. You never heard anything like that?
No. According to the I've read in the official document, he died of a heart attack. Nude.
Well, I see. I'm thinking that this what you're telling me so ties in, because he's very powerful with the banking industry, right? Rockefellers.
Yeah.
I mean, John was
sure.
Was what did he start? Chase or
David?
David started the Chase one.
Chase Manhattan.
Yeah, and so you know there are those that say the bankers have a lot of power in the world, and they kind of create what goes on.
Yes, and. In this particular case, it was oil, which is the other one, which is the Rockefellers made their money, and David was the head of Chase Manhattan Bank. And in this case, this plan or this chess strategy, whatever you want to refer to it as, did enable him to become as close to president as he desired.
And so, you know, I'm sure that, if you have an industry where you have a monopoly, or you're trying to create a monopoly, as little as competition as possible, you're going to do everything you can, very ruthless things, to make money. And that could involve putting people in a position, killing presidents, killing vice presidents, whatever. I mean, you see that as well, right?
They have other people who do that for them.
So they might bump off some people so they can get certain legislation, get people of power in there that will either influence or create certain legislation that favors them.
Oh, absolutely, sure. I mean, the good people do that. And in this book, the characters who did what they did, none of them thought they were doing anything wrong.
Hmm.
Only Gayla, the one woman, and she wasn't really evil. It was a wrong thing to do, but it wasn't. The whole story is not a grand conspiracy. Even Jude Thaddeus, who was the chess player who set it all up, his mission was to help Nelson Rockefeller achieve his lifelong goal and to be the president of the United States.
Understandably so, but they were planning on bringing a hitman in, so that part of it wasn't so innocent and sweet.
Well, you got to make scrambled eggs, you have to break the yolks.
Yeah, that yolk would have been Gerald Ford. I don't know if that's a good, because I'm not going to, honey, what are we having for breakfast today? Gerald Ford, we got him on a platter right here. So,
well, there could have been another alternative also, is that... and I toyed with the idea of the story of making it so he would resign, between his wife's drinking or whatever. But the assassination attempts were real. I mean, they're not a figment of anyone's imagination. You know, those two gals are still in the jail.
Yeah, and you said, but Rockefeller, was he directly connected to these two gals?
Oh, no, no. Just like a man in power, they have their surrogates set it up.
So they really, but others set it up so these two women could be in the right place to have a take a shot at Gerald Ford.
Yes.
And then they connected to Manson. Were these gals really truly connected to Manson in some way?
Well, only one of them was the Manson girl. I mean, so it was ideal. I mean, she was, and it was South American drugs that were the characters that ran with the drugs and the money were the ones that were hired to carry this thing off very arm's length away, you might say.
You don't think that there's maybe other things, John, that you weren't able to dig up that could have been covered up to even a bigger link to what else might have been going on?
Well, the OPEC was one that was kind of obvious that I picked up. But as far as behind the other multiple conspiracies in the world and the like, I'm not saying they don't exist, and this one was so phenomenal, and it is so the evidence is there clearly to see. The other conspiracies and the like, one would have to uncover those to see it. But yes, I would suspect that there's a lot more than meets the eye.
A lot more, and it's kind of cool that we got a little bit of history that you've been able to find some support for, find some answers to, that I kind of wondered, you know, the whole thing with Nixon. Now, it took me years later because I accepted the press, like a lot of people do still today. You assume that your press is being honest with you. So you see the man resigning, he covered it up, and I guess in that respect, you know, he did something wrong. But the whole thing was set up from the beginning. Go ahead, John.
Oh, yeah. And here's just like you said about the press. If you ask 99 out of 100 people, what do you think of Richard Nixon? Everyone has a negative approach of him. He was a mean guy. He was this, that, and the other thing. But if you remember when he left the White House, I remember reading a book called Upstairs at the White House. It was written by a butler. And the Nixons, this guy had been the butler at the White House from Truman on right up through Gerald Ford, I believe it was. But he said of all the presidents, the Nixons were the most considerate and kind to the staff. And when Nixon left the White House, and you can see the videos, the waiters, the house cleaners, the maids, they were all on the line, on the lawn, and they all were crying. That's how much they liked the Nixons. Now, if he was such a mean, nasty, grumpy old person, nobody, you know, they'd be glad to get rid of him.
They would have been cheering. They would have been jumping up and down.
Right. And so the media has this image that he was spiteful and mean. And yet the same author of the Upstairs at the White House had mentioned that the warmth and the charm of the Kennedys was not dispersed to the hired help. as an example, but it's unfortunate that the news media doesn't. Well, it isn't accurate, but that's.
How much of our history, John? Just to jump off this a little bit. How much of it do you think is manipulated?
In the news?
Going back in our history, back to the earliest time, do you think there's manipulation in the press and the way things have been told?
Oh, sure, but that goes right back to Washington. In Washington, when he was running for his second term, there was journalists that were saying that he was not only an incompetent general, but he was a spy for the English.
Hmm.
And the newspaper that was printing that was supported by Thomas Jefferson.
Wow.
And when you in the manipulation of the press, under Lincoln, he had publishers of the newspapers arrested and incarcerated without trial.
Yeah, he did bend the rules a little bit.
Yeah, he did. And Andrew Jackson, when he moved the Cherokees from the South, it was
the Trail of Tears. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know there, but I'm just also wondering if there's things that we didn't hear that go beyond that. I've heard some of those things about that, but as far as like, maybe there's a lot of lies that we're not even aware of in our history.
Oh, I'm sure. In our own neighborhoods there are too. But yes.
There was an investigation on a program involving, was it Meriwether Clark? Was he the governor of Tennessee at one point? Or was it the other one? Or was it the other guy? Remember Lewis and Clark? Was it Lewis or Clark?
I think it was Clark you're referring to.
Clark was he committed suicide. And I watched this program where they do investigations. And I know it's a TV program on the History Channel. But they were able to dig up that even back then that he... They said he committed suicide, but the witness who saw him was 30 miles away somewhere else. And they believed that a general maybe bumped him off and killed him because he wanted to be the governor. And he was very angry by that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking those kind of things have probably happened throughout our history.
Oh, they have. I'm sure of that. And one of the interesting things of this story is that the 25th Amendment was so blatant, and yet it was so hidden. But it was hidden right out in the open.
Hmm. Is there anything else you want to talk about with your book then, John? Have we covered most of it? Is there more you want to talk about?
I think we covered a lot of the bases of it. It's the one interesting point, incidentally, when you mentioned David Rockefeller, the Twin Towers, incidentally, were called Nelson and David because those towers were built because Chase Manhattan Bank and Nelson Rockefeller was the governor at the time. So that's how they built the towers.
Hmm.
Now, the real character of this book, incidentally, Jude Thaddeus, his real name is David Young. Now, as crazy as this character is, in real life, when I was writing the book, I was thinking, now, what would you do with the character after he accomplishes his mission? What would you do with him? You could kill him off, then you could never write another book about him, or you could put him in a mental institution, and then you could pick him out if you wanted to write another story. So those were the two doors that were open to me. But in real life, there was a third alternative, which I found out years later.
Hmm.
And David Young, if you haven't heard, was a Watergate guy. He was the one who gave the term plumbers to the plumbers. And you can Google him. You can find that this guy really existed. And he was very, very similar to Jude Thaddeus. Now, I didn't realize this until much later, but he was Nelson Rockefeller's personal lawyer before he went to work for Henry Kissinger at the White House.
Interesting.
Now, after the Watergate comes to service, they all go to jail, except for Kissinger had nothing to do with it. But David Young was right in the midst of it. He turned state's evidence. And he goes to London, starts a business called, Young International Business Consultants. Now, 20 years later, he had a website, and on the website, David Young International Business, and he gives a little history about his starting his business in London. And he was so grateful because in international business, he had his first two clients that were very helpful was Chase Manhattan Bank and Exxon.
Mm.
So David Rockefeller was the president of Chase Manhattan Bank, and if you have Exxon as to start a business as international business consultant, those two not too shabby to start out with.
No, pretty good resume with that. Huh? Well, I think it's really interesting what you've dug up, and I hope you look at some other things because it'd be nice to find out about some other things going on, John. I guess we can all do that. It takes a lot of time, though. How many years did you research all of this?
There's probably, at least 30 years of collecting dots, you might say, and when they all come together, it's just mind-boggling.
It is.
just a little sidebar, incidentally, was one when Rumsfeld's newest book came out. He talks. I read it, and one of the points was interest. Always when I hear Agnew or Nixon or whatever, and so Rumsfeld was an interesting character, and back he was in Miami, 1968, when Nixon got the nomination, and he said that they were up at like 2 or 3 in the morning after Nixon got the nomination, and they were going over lists of vice presidents who would be the Nixon's vice president candidate, and they had a list of like 6 or 8 people that they were picking apart, arguing back and forth, this guy, that guy, this. And he said about 2 o'clock in the morning, Nixon came into the meeting, and he was very refreshed, and he said, well, how are we doing with the selection? And I said, well, we have this one, we have Governor so-and-so, we have Senator so-and-so, we have this one and that one. And I said, yeah, okay. He said, well, how about, he threw out some name, he said it was left off the ball, and then he said, or Spiro Agnew. And Rumsfeld said, everybody looked around, and they said, who? He said, Spiro Agnew, you know, Governor of Maryland. And they would, we didn't even know, we didn't, what, who? You know, and it was kind of, well, just think about it. And then he said Nixon got up and left. And then Rumsfeld said, I think Nixon's mind was made up before he even came into the room that night. Now, that book was just published last year, whatever it was. Now, this is just sidebar. It's not in the book, it's just sidebar information. But that one personal secretary who was worked for like a butler for Nixon's, the night, this is 2 hours or 4 hours earlier, in a different article I read, one of the other dots, and he talks about the night Nixon got the nomination. He said that they were in the hotel room, they were watching it, just Pat and Richard Nixon, and then they got a knock on the door, and in comes Nelson Rockefeller. Nixon already got the nomination. And he said, Rocky, made Rocky a drink. Rocky sat down, and they were talking to Pat and Nixon, and he was very happy. And Nixon asked him, all right, now, he said, other than the vice president, what do you want, Rocky? And he said, well, he said, for the vice president, I would like Ted. And Nixon and the butler said, Nixon looked at Pat, and she stared back at him, and both mouths were open, and they said something to the effect, you want Ted Kennedy? And Rocky took a sip of a drink, smiled, he says, no, 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 he said, Ted. But his friends, his name is Spiro, but his friends called him Ted, Ted Agnew.
Wow.
And Nixon and Pat, they just shook their head. And that's how Agnew was chosen as vice president.
Yeah, really, you know, it really was. It makes you wonder, if you don't believe what anything that you're saying, John, how did this guy come out of nowhere to become vice president?
Right. And he was chosen to be so that he could be removed.
Removed, and then Nelson Rockefeller had an opportunity to become vice president and then perhaps president. And he decided, because of his health, you said, and he didn't want to deal with to become president.
Yeah. Did you ever go in life when you really want something so bad, and then all of a sudden, at the very end, you say, I'm going to pass on it.
See, I just find that hard. The guys that are the movers and the shakers, the ones that truly are, they will keep pushing it, even if it means their life, because, well, maybe not in this case, but I'm just saying, the ones that really are the movers and shakers, I don't think they care. And I think there's an agenda, and I think there's a group of them that meet, and they say, you're going to do this, and you're going to do that, and blah, blah, blah. And so you don't have an option sometimes.
Well, right, but the real shakers, the real pushers, and Nelson Rockefeller was one of those real pushers. He had the power, but he still, with all the power that he could muster, he couldn't get elected.
I think he could have thrown a few elections if he wanted. You know what? We're going to buy the votes.
But he spent a fortune, and he tried.
Yeah.
And
when did he run for president? Did he run for president more than once? Or?
Sure, he ran in 1960.
That was the only time he ran?
Well, no, he ran at other times, but he couldn't get the nomination.
Mm, okay. So he ran on the Republican Party.
Yeah, he just could never get the nomination. He could never get out of New York.
He couldn't beat Nixon in 60, my goodness. I suppose because Nixon was vice president coming off.
Nixon was vice president, yeah. And in 68, it was in his best interest to support Nixon because of what was laying down range.
Well, that's a very interesting book that you have. It's called The Watergate Amendment, and you can find out more, thewatergateamendment.com. Is there any other way to find out about this as well, John?
Well, just on the Watergate, watergateamendment.com and on amazon.com.
Yeah, regular places where you get books, I'm
yep.
sure. So, well, it's very fascinating. I hope you have some more books coming out. I'd like to hear some other investigations. Are you going to have any more coming out soon or anything?
Well, I have the Thanksgiving Breakfast, which is on Amazon.com also, and that's a saga. It's a historical type saga, not a conspiracy. And there's a fascinating book I hope to have out at the end of the year, and it's about coal mining and how coal is the secret ingredient that changed the world.
Hmm. Sounds like you've got a lot of cool projects, John. I appreciate you talking to me.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it very much, TJ.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.